Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. As you very likely know, we just completed the 12th annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk this last Saturday, and I'm pleased to be joined by Mickey, who is someone who did a very fun fundraiser on behalf of that very day. Welcome, Mickey.
Thank you, Jen.
So I wonder if you could tell us, so this is not the first year, I should mention, that you have done such a fundraiser.
No.
It's become quite a tradition.
It has become a tradition. It's I think it's gotten to the point where I couldn't not do it.
Right, exactly. All your friends would write and say, "What's up? We haven't gotten a letter."
They'd probably send money anyway.
Yeah. And to me, what's so fun is all the really varied things you've chosen over the year, and I love the one you did this year. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about it.
Okay. Well, it actually started in a way when we chose our Learning to Love Learning projects.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, you know, this isn't a challenge for me because I love to learn. And I thought, but, you know, there's actually one kind of learning that is a challenge for me, and that's learning to play a musical instrument.
Oh, uh-huh.
It's never been something I've felt that I've ever been able to be very successful at.
So
I chose to learn to play a musical instrument. I chose to learn to play the ukulele.
Oh, that is so perfect. If, you know, I know that's not the topic of the interview, but that is a great, you just underlined such a great practice principle. So you love to learn. There are all kinds of things you love to learn. But you're
yep.
put this practice challenge is put in front of you, and so you realize, okay, if I'm going to really, you know, go up against conditioning here, I'm going to choose something that supposedly I don't love learning, the one thing that I, quote, haven't been successful at, and choose that. What a fun decision.
Right. So I even have been taking lessons. You know, I really just got into it, but I was feeling very frustrated that I wasn't doing what I would consider very well. So, and at the same time, I was also thinking about, you know, what's going to be my fun game for my fundraising crew this year. And so I thought, well, how about if they get to help me motivate myself. So I said between, you know, I think when I sent out the email, it was about the end of June, and I said between then and September 1st, if they could guess how many new songs I would learn in that time, and then they would pledge whatever amount they wanted to per new song learned.
Oh, so great.
And so that I would have a little incentive to...
Yeah.
up the practice and stay with it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so great. Yeah.
And I also had a contest where they could suggest a name for my ukulele because it didn't have a name yet.
Oh, and did someone win? Does it have a name?
It does have a name, and you have it's a little blue ukulele.
Okay.
And I don't know if you have to be a certain age or a culture to really get the name, but the winning name was Babe the Blue Box from Paul Bunyan, who had this ox bit called Babe the Blue Ox.
Oh, oh, that's great. So someone wrote that in as a suggestion.
Yeah, that was somebody wrote it in as a suggestion. And the one who got the winning name and closest to the winning number of songs gets a private concert.
And you just hope the winner's not in Australia or something, right?
That's right. Well, some of them, they could get it over the phone, but, you know, actually it ended up the winners are all going to have a chance to get it in person. So,
that's so great.
So, it was very fun. And you know, I have this kind of core group of people who I have contacted every year when I do a fundraiser. And, you know, they really are donors in their own right now for the Africa Project, you know. A couple of them particularly are really hooked on the project and send, you know, way more than I ever expect anybody to send. So I really almost don't have to do something fun every year. I could just ask, but I think they and I have more fun when I come up with some kind of a scheme.
For sure. And it's funny, Mickey, I'm sure you've been listening to the interviews we've been having over the last several weeks of folks doing various fundraisers, and that theme comes up again and again, that it's such there's so much for the person doing the fundraising project in it. You know, it's so fun for you. I project. So, yeah, you could just send out a letter and you could say, doing my fundraiser again this year, you know, here's what's going on in the project. But just that process of looking to see, well, what would be fun? What lights me up this year? And that you get that and everyone involved gets that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's very fun. And I have people who give all across the spectrum. From, you know, one person who gives what much of the world would think would be a very small amount, but I know, happen to know for her, it's huge.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, and it's whatever people can give. And it always turns out way more than I think it's going to be.
Yeah. And, you know, takes me all the way back to, I think, Sandy and the San Diego Yard Sale might have been the first in this string of interviews.
Yeah.
And it takes me back to speaking with her about that same theme, which is starting low those many, like, I think she said 12 years ago, where, it starts out as a small venture and you make a little money and you send it in and it's really exciting. And then every year it builds on itself to where I project a lot of folks are in the situation you're in now where they have a whole group of people who maybe it's the person in the sangha who really connects them to the actual project, but that, as you say, they're donors in their own right now. And it's such motivation for someone who's maybe not done it before or just jumping in to not expect the first year it might not be a huge thing, but that it really does build on itself year after year, the fun and the energy and the inspiration, even the funds.
Yeah. And, you know, I think for me it's always an important part of it, too, has been really keeping them in touch with the project, you know, and, you know, letting them know about the blogs and things like that so that it's not just that their connection is with me, but that they do come to have a connection with the project. So I'm kind of their conduit, but, you know, I think, you know, sometimes I can get people to give things that I'm involved in just because they know me and they say if I tell them they should give to this, they will.
Right.
They don't. But then if I happen to then move on from that, they won't continue to support it because they were really supporting with me. But I think this particular group of people, I think, has definitely moved beyond that, you know.
Yeah, well, what strikes me as you say that is that when we do something like this, when we take on a fundraising project or that sort of thing, we're facilitators.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
We're facilitating a connection.
There. Yeah, that's a really good point. It's a really good point. And I always make sure to go through the conclusion. So, like, right now I'm designing a little thank you card that I'll send to everybody, actually in the mail, you know, so that
they
get that.
Wow.
Because I don't just want to like get the money and say great thanks, you know, but to really give them a little report about the bridge walk and what we did.
Yeah. We walked all the way around Menlo Park.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. So for folks who don't know, I'm sure the word has spread, but so we were not at Chrissy Field at our traditional venue right at the foot of the Golden Gate Bridge this year because Chrissy Field is a national park. And so because of the government shutdown, it was closed. And truly, in the last 48 hours before the event, we moved the entire thing down to the South Bay to just a local picnic park in Menlo Park and had, I think, a fabulous time.
I think we had a great time, too. I don't know that anybody there missed the bridge at all.
It kind of reminds me of the theme of it takes on a life of its own, you know. So now your group of funders, knows the project. It's like we all bring the bridge walk with us, so it doesn't matter if it's in Menlo Park.
That's right.
Well, thanks, Mickey. It's very, very inspiring and fun, and I just know that before we know it, we're going to be talking about 2014. So
I know. I better start thinking now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
So, anything else before we end?
No, just encouraging people to start somewhere. I mean, I don't even remember now what my first one was, but you know, there's been a variety of them, and I've enjoyed them all. So,
Some of the others I can kind of remember. Do you want to lay out a few of them?
Yeah, well, there was a biking year where I rode my age in one day, and there was hiking year where people could guess my total number of miles hiked.
Uh-huh.
And one year we just simply sponsored kids. I think that was last year. And we ended up sponsoring 10 kids for the year.
I remember the goal was like twice.
Yeah.
I mean, what you actually raised was, I think, twice what the original goal was.
We were aiming for 5, and we ended up with 10.
Oh, yeah. Really, really fun. Yep.
It kind of surprises me every year what it turns out to be, so that's fun.
It's really fun. Yep. You're just as much of a bystander as anyone else, you know. Just
that's right. That's
you're facilitating
right.
but you get to participate just like everyone else. So
Life pops in the idea, and I go, okay.
Okay, sure. I'll fulfill like that.
That's right.
Great. Well, thanks, Mickey. Great to have you on.
You bet.
Oh, good night.
Bye-bye.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Mickey. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you doing?
Great. And yourself?
Good. You know, here's the burning question, though. What is she going to come up with next? As I was listening, I thought, well, that really is fun. You know, it really would be fun to, as she said, she doesn't think about these things, but life drops it in and she says, oh, okay, I'll do that, and then goes on and has a wonderful, successful time doing it. And so to be open to that, you know, I'd love to do something fun like that for the next bridge walk, and I'd like to start now. So, you know, I guess we're not going to have Learning to Love Learning next year. I don't know what we're going to do without it, but we'll think of something, I guess. But, you know, to just put something together like that and then to grow it, it's really... I love it. I confess I've been sort of boring about the whole thing, you know, about how to mostly just supporting other people's fundraisers rather than, you know, than coming up with something like that that I would have that much fun doing. So I'm inspired.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Can I sign up for the bridge walk now, do you know? Probably not. It's probably a little early for that.
Soon.
Anyway,
I'm sure it was soon.
A good time. It was a good time, wasn't it?
It was a fabulous time. I had a really, really wonderful time.
Did the boys have fun?
They had a great time.
Yeah, they looked
they
like
had
it.
A great time.
Like everybody was having a good time. Dancing to the...
I was going to say it was fun singing to the folks in Cantalamba. That was really great.
Yes. Yeah. The singing to them and then... The dancing, I don't know, just took on a whole new life of its own this time, didn't it? Maybe,
yes, it did.
I don't know why, but it did. And so, yeah, I'm right there. The bridge walk, and of course, I'm sure we'll go back, assuming the government is in operation by then, to Golden Gate Bridge. But, boy, we can be grateful to Menlo Park for providing us with such a fabulous location. So somebody was telling me that there's a young man who was there for the first time, and somebody said to him, well, weren't you disappointed though that it wasn't at the bridge? And he said, oh no, we can be there next year. there's the fun to attitude.
Yes. Can I share one thing about Mickey and Jen's conversation?
Oh, please.
What I'm really appreciating is the building of it over time, year after year. And what I was seeing in that is the power of relationship that comes from practice and that connection, that unique connection we have of presence without any obligation or pressure or feeling that you should give, but just that natural, close relationship that comes from practice.
Yes. Yeah, exactly so. Yeah, and you know it can even all be done in part of this is what you're saying, I think, but within a privileged environment, no matter who these people are, it can be such a great demonstration of our practice and a way to bring people into our practice who very likely won't choose ever to participate in that way, but can have a feel for what it is and how it is and what we're about, which I think is a good thing.
Yes, very good thing.
Mm-hmm.
A very good thing. And I have some announcements here.
I wondered, what do you got left for us this year? Oh, we have an email class coming up.
And that's not even on my list, and that is true.
My gosh, we have an email class starting, I think, the end of this month, isn't it?
I think that's about right.
Everything is the Buddha.
Great.
Yeah, that was in fact, that was when we asked people, what email class would you like to have? What's the subject? I think that was our winner. So,
oh, great.
Definitely want to let people know, sign up for that.
Yes, yes.
What else is going on, Michael?
What else is going on is the final Rest and Be Thankful retreat of the season.
That's right.
Yes.
When is that?
That's October 25 through 27. It includes yoga and art workshops and simple, delicious foods, all offered in the beauty of nature and the tranquility of the monastery.
Yeah, and if the weather holds, oh my goodness gracious, it's just stunning.
Lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be offering two workshops on the West Coast. First one is October 26th in San Francisco, and then December 1st in Mountain View.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to both of those.
Me too. So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org to find out more and to sign up for any of these events.
Well, and it's not too early, is it, to remind people about the New Year's retreat?
That
and I think
is correct.
Registration is open for that one too.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
A favorite. All right. Do you have some people for us to talk to?
Yes, I do. Let me just remind folks the call-in number, 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. Show ID is 15406. And then folks can hit £1 or their pin followed by pound. And I want to remind folks to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get going.
Hi.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Andrew, and I just recently got the good fortune of coming across Cherry Huber's book, and it really helped me for my procrastination issues. You know, I was always delaying things, and, you know, when I read her book, I Don't Want To, I Don't Feel Like It, and it's really, really, you know, really gave me a good boost. You know, so we, first of all, I would like to thank her for writing such a wonderful book.
Well,
hello?
You're most welcome, Andrew.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Sherry.
Thank you for
and,
the kind words.
Oh, thank you very much for writing the nice book. The question I had with the call about was that I have, I always tend to relapse into my, you know, groove, the karmic groove of procrastination. And I just wanted your advice on what to do about these, you know, relapses, you know, going back into my old habits, and also on what to do about, because I'm a student right now, I'm studying, and, you know, there's a lot of complicated subjects to go over, and the mind just resists, you know, whenever it approaches something that, you know, it doesn't like or, you know, doesn't find interesting, it just resists. So I wanted your advice on what to do about that and, you know, how to tackle this issue.
Uh-huh. And so let me make sure that I'm with you. So you're fine until
mm-hmm.
there's something that you're told by the voice in your head. That
yeah.
it's not interesting, or you don't like this, or it's not fun, or exciting, or challenging, or that sort of thing, and then you go
yeah.
along with that, and you don't. That's where your procrastination kicks in.
Right, it can just creep up out of nowhere. Like I had a really good week. I read half your book, and I had a really good week of productivity, but then you know, for yesterday, out of nowhere, it just. I mean, I didn't know where it hit me. I just, you know. it just went downhill. I wasn't feeling the same high or the same, you know, energy boost that I had when I first read your book. And, you know, it's just kind of weird what you do when the person, you know, goes back into their old habits,
yeah,
their old grooves,
yeah,
of doing,
yeah,
things.
Yeah. Well, that's you've hit on the very essence of practice, right? Because what we talk about, and I think we actually talk about it in that very book, there's a little person jumping over a hurdle, and it says, get over how you feel. And if I'm remembering all the little cartoons right, and that's key in practice. We have to stop being concerned about how we feel in order to determine what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if let me do a little time out and back up. So that process of resistance, you know from reading that book, is how ego identity maintains itself. So basically, it controls you by saying, I like that, I don't like that, I want to do that, I don't want to do that, I don't feel like it, whatever it is. And if it were speaking for you, then it would be taking care of you. So I'm too tired, I want to rest, I want to do something else. And if that were true, and it were speaking for you, then you would do what it said, and you would feel good. But you've been paying attention long enough to notice that what it's actually doing is setting you up to feel bad. Because procrastination has never gotten anybody anything other than misery.
Very true.
Right? Yeah. So, again, you know, if I could procrastinate about stuff that I don't want to do and it would just go away, well, we would say, well, that's a smart approach. But instead, the pressure and the stress build, and it gets worse, and the voices in my head are now at a certain point, they're beating me up for not having done it, and there are repercussions, and, you know, I pay a big price for it. So what we learn to do in practice is, first of all, to stop believing that those voices have anything to do with us, with how we feel, what we choose, who we are. So have you come across our book, Making a Change for Good?
Well, I'm very new, and, you know, I'm not familiar with all the books,
okay,
that you have.
Okay.
I'm going to research more and try to get all of them.
Okay, well, you don't have to get all of them. You know, pace yourself, especially since you're already a student. You know, you don't want to overdo. But in the back of that book is a 30-day retreat. And so if you were to do that 30-day retreat, this is how you would be encouraged to approach it. So you would pick something that, so you pick procrastination, right? And that's what you want to explore during the 30 days. And you're not approaching it from the point of view of you want to be different about doing anything in particular. What you're doing is watching how the voices control you.
It's very easy to get swept away sometimes when you're watching them. Sometimes it's really hard to notice it, like, you know, what,
yes,
you're doing. But sometimes you get swept away and you forget that you're supposed to watch but not participate in the,
right,
you know, in the thought process.
That's right. That's why doing something like the 30-day retreat is so good, because you check in the morning and you check in the evening. So you're having a chance to watch the process day after day after day, and you begin to see how it does what it does to you. And that's the point of the retreat, because once the voices are no longer able to control you, you won't procrastinate. Because what you know already is procrastinating doesn't feel good.
Oh, okay. So just to be,
yeah,
be like the neutral observer, I guess.
That's exactly right. And it's a process that you can apply to everything in your life. So maybe you, if you had an issue with food, maybe you eat too much sugar, or you drink too much caffeine, or you don't get enough sleep, or you don't keep up with your family, or you whatever it is that the voices are talking you into, in order for you to feel bad, you can apply this same process to any content and step free of it.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? So if I have basically just stop feeling and just be a neutral observer, is that what you're saying?
Yes, you'll see how the voices control you. So, for instance, if it's, you know, cookies are a big deal for a lot of people, right? So let's say I decide I'm not going to eat cookies, okay? I'm not going to eat them. And I do really well for about 3 or 4 days. And then I forget that I decided I wasn't going to eat cookies, okay? And then suddenly I'm halfway through my bag of cookies and I come to and I realize what's happened, and the voice says, well, you know, you've eaten this many, you've already blown it, you might as well eat the rest. So I eat the rest of the cookies, and then I get beaten up for having not kept my commitment and eating the cookies. Right? Is that familiar at all?
Yeah, to try to move myself away from the doer and to be like an observer. Am I kind of getting it right?
Yes. Well, and what you'll see is it's all happening in a conversation. So first I'm distracted. My attention is drawn to something over here. And then the conversation starts. And without me knowing it, I get talked into doing something. And then I get beaten up for doing it. So once you catch on to that as a process, you'll see that that process is how you're controlled in every aspect of your life. First, you're distracted, and then a conversation starts that talks you into or out of something, and then you come to, and you're beaten up for what you did.
That's a really nice insight.
So here's my encouragement, Andrew. Take your time. Don't make it a contest. Because what you want to do is see the process, not improve yourself.
Okay. So just to see the process of how the mind is deluding oneself, like how it goes into the grooves and try to take you away from what you're trying to do.
That's exactly right. See that rather than what it'll try to talk you into is making a self-improvement plan. Don't do that. Just observe. Just watch how it does it. Then call me and tell me what you see.
Okay. And what do you mean by the ego eye, the ego identity? Is that the voice in our head that tells us, okay, do this, do that? Or, okay, all right.
Yes. For right now, that's good enough. What happens with us is that we believe that the ego eye, which has been formed over time, it's not our authentic nature, is who we are. And so the voice that's talking to us all the time is maintaining that illusion. It sounds complex. As you go along, the steps of it become more apparent.
It's really nice what you're saying. I'm having a realization. And that's what happens when I read your book. I get the realization, and it lingers there for a couple of days. And then, I fall back into the old pattern.
That's right. Okay. And so that's when you want to do more to re-inspire yourself, to remind yourself. Yeah? So that's why we're always coming up with a new focus for our practice. So right now, you're observing that distraction and that conversation.
Good. All right. I'll make sure I do that.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Do that and
you know,
let us know.
Would you, Right, and would you recommend which book should I start off with first, like in your series? Should it be the one that I'm reading right now? Because I don't know if I was going ahead
is
of myself
the,
or...
You're reading which, the newest one?
I don't want to. I don't feel like it.
Yeah. The next one is There's Nothing Wrong With You.
Okay, so after this, I'll read nothing.
That'll give you a good background in what we're talking about right now.
Thank you again, you know, Ms. Cherry. You're doing a great service. And
well, thank
you. I hope
you
continue to produce more books like this that can help, you know, help millions of people more. I was very lucky. I was in the Barnes & Noble. I was just browsing some books, and, you know, it kind of caught my eye, and I just picked it up and started reading, and I instantly fell in love with the material, and, you know, I just wanted to explore it more, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Oh, well, keep in touch.
Yeah, oh, definitely I will. Thank you very
much. All right. Good night.
See you next week. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Andrew. You're listening to Open Air with Cherry Huber. Cherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Rexford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. We have a long list of callers here, Cherry, so let me bring
good.
The next one on.
All right, thanks.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Cherry. Hi, Michael. This is Jen in Pennsylvania.
Hey, Jen.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I am doing really well. I wanted to say a big thank you for the resistance retreat. It was amazing, and I keep just, yeah, there's so much wonderful stuff to be with from that, so that was fabulous.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to say a little shout-out, too, for, I don't know how I kind of missed this, but this the recording and listening app that's available, I am so excited about this. Well, I actually have not had... I don't have a smartphone, and I was kind of out of the loop of some of the technology, I guess, but my old iPod died, and so I was forced to check out, you know, the new world of iPods, which was a great blessing because I was searching for the Open Air app and things like that, and I found the recording and listening app, and it just looks really fun. I just got it, and I've just started playing with it, but it looks like an amazing way to organize your recordings and be able to shuffle them and have all kinds of neat things happening without having to like put it into your music library. And I feel like it's like the best Christmas present ever. I'm like so excited to keep playing with it.
Oh,
and,
good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited. So we were just at the Bridgewalk, as you were.
Yes.
And I was talking to the author of that, but I didn't know it was available yet. I thought it was still in whatever they call it, beta. But it's out there.
It's out there. That maybe that's how I missed it, because maybe we didn't know it was quite there.
How
but
much is, how much is it, Jen? How much is it?
It is $14.99. And let me tell you, I think this is a very good use of $14.99. I was very happy to spend that money.
Wow. All right. Okay. Well, fabulous.
Yeah, it's really
good.
Neat.
Well, I'm going to go get it myself because... yeah, I'm right there. The number of things that I have done to try to get my phone recordings to, you know, I Google until my little fingers are numb. And I can't make it work. I know other people do, but I can't seem to make it work. So I'm right there. I'm really glad for something easy.
Yes, it looks just really fun and really wonderful. I've been just in the digital recording land, so I'm often joking, you know, like I have these sticky notes like, okay, folder D, number 72, that's the one, you know, that I want to listen to, because I can't name anything and stuff, and this is just so exciting. It's really easy to name stuff and put it in your guidance folder or your mentor folder or whatever, all these categories that are given to you through the app, so it looks super fun and exciting. So big thanks to everybody who created that. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for letting us know. Wow, that's wonderful.
It looks wonderful to me. I'm
slick,
excited.
We're getting so slick.
I know. I was like, look at this thing. This is amazing.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you don't even have to be a part of our Songbit to enjoy that. You know, anybody who wants to do recording and listening, there it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm playing with that. And I also, you know, I just wanted to be in touch. But a couple of weeks ago, you were talking with a caller, and it just really, really struck me. I think what I heard was you were talking about the difference between, you know, making a practice commitment and then sort of getting on a program, like the conditioned program. And, you know, it just really jumped out for me. And I don't know, I'd love to, you know, talk a little more about that or hear your thoughts a little bit more about it. Because I'm sensing that there is a tendency for, you know, me to be put on the conditioned program, even if I think maybe it's a practice commitment kind of place, you know?
Uh-huh. So can you say a little bit about how it works? So there you are. You're going to, well, let's say you're going to record and listen every day. And then what happens?
Yeah, I think it becomes really rigid, like, okay, and it will be, you know, after lunch at this time, and I'm going to have a check sheet to check it off if I've done it, and there's a whole, it's just an interesting place to me, because sometimes I feel like, I don't know, maybe the, you know, check sheet is helpful that I can, you know, I can see if I'm doing things or not, and it does feel like sometimes, you know, it becomes, it turns so quickly into a standard, you know. Am I doing this in the right way so that I can say that I'm a good person? You know, it kind of loses that intention was that it be a joyful support to my practice, and that kind of goes away.
Yes, and the danger, of course, in that is that if people confuse those, then they will believe that they should stop making commitments or stop having checklists, because the commitment and the checklist gets blamed for the conditioned behavior. But what you're really pointing at is you want to keep it fun.
Exactly, yes.
You don't want it to be taken over by the voices and turned into misery. And
exactly.
that is such a crucial point. It really is. Because, as I say, if conditioning can make things miserable, so we talk a lot about, you know, if you can be trained not to be aware, because every time you're aware of something, you get beaten up for it, then what a coup, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now I don't want to see anything. I don't want to know. Don't tell me, because, you know, I'm just going to feel bad. And so what we want to do, of course, is increase our awareness and decrease the feeling bad. We want to increase our support, our commitments, and our support for practice, and we want to take away conditioning's ability to turn it into a contest or a self-improvement thing.
Mm-hmm.
We want to do more and have more fun.
Yes, that sounds really good.
Yeah. That's what we're
do more
for.
And have more fun. I'm on board, yes.
Yeah, and that's what practice is. So,
I
was talking, I think, recently on this or on the Thursday night, I don't know, sometime, but I just started doing, you know, SARS and hearts and all of these things on my calendar for when I do all of my practice commitments. And I think it's really fun. And the thing that I like about it is kind of what Andrew was talking about. And mm-hmm. So there it is, you know, it sits out on my desk. I can't not know that it's there. I mean, I suppose I could put it away, but I've been paying attention for a little too long to, you know, fall for that. So, you know, lose it in the garbage can or something.
Right.
And so there it is. So it really is, it is a support in that I don't want to get to the end of the day and not have done these things because I know the chances of doing it at the end of the day aren't good. And so it makes me prioritize it. And then the, you know, the little row of hearts and stars, the young parts of me really like that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if it starts turning into a you should, you have to, did you, that sort of thing, then I want to focus right there and toss that out. No, we're not, no. This is to take care of things. This is for fun. This is not for feeling bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's stopping it, right? It's stopping it right there, not stopping the commitment, not stopping the support, but stopping the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
That
it is always that. Always stopping the conversation.
That, yeah, that conversation.
Yes, okay, thanks. That's a great place to look because I do see that just a lot of the fun going out of commitments that I know initially felt really fun and supportive. So that's a great place to look is, okay, where's the conversation starting and stopping that? Yeah,
and you know, Jen, that can be the learning to love learning part of it, right? So, you know, you've been doing this. It was fun. Now it's not. Okay, well, then we know it's been taken over.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to learn to put the fun back in it.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, learn to put the fun back in it. Yeah, okay.
Because, again, that's one of those processes that once we learn how to do it, it also goes along with what Andrew was talking about, right? So there's something that I'm not interested in doing, and there are those things that we just don't have an aptitude for or we just, you know, don't spark or whatever, but
mm-hmm.
we can learn to have fun doing them
mm-hmm.
if we know how to have fun. And having fun, of course, is an essential part of being a human being, right? Because if we're not having fun, and it's hard, you know, happiness, fun, you know, those kinds of words can be misleading. But if there's not enjoyment, life is inherently enjoyable. If we're not enjoying, then we're not with life. So how do I enjoy this? How do I put the fun back in it? How do I get here present with life out of that conversation so that I'm enjoying?
I love that. There are, I think, lots of little folks who are just like, woo, this sounds great. So, yeah.
Yes. And again, with what you're saying, that's what we're doing. We want those innocent, younger parts of us, connected parts of us to have a really good time and be safe doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay,
so you're going
to let some fun right. to practice with. Yes, absolutely.
Some fun to practice. All right.
Thank you. Take care. Bye bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. You're listening to Open Air, and we have more callers here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sharon, Michael. This is Chris from Seattle.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
Good. What's going on?
Well, second. Let's see. Well, it's a funny thing. About a little over a year ago, I returned to playing the trumpet, which I hadn't done since 1985. And that's been a lot of fun, and I enjoy it. And I want to do it, perform more, and that's great. What I'm finding is it's important to play regularly to, you know, to build up strength, especially as a brass instrument.
Uh-huh.
It takes a certain amount of strength just to get through a program or hit certain notes or whatever. Anyway, and I'll be really consistent playing, which helps me, and I can see the improvement. It's almost as soon as I see the noticeable improvement, then the practicing starts to become spottier and spottier and spottier until I notice that I'm not practicing as regularly as I'd like, and then I crank it back up again. And this has been happening since I returned to it again, and I didn't really notice it for a long time, and then I've just been noticing it more, how it just drops away until I see that it has, and then I'm like, wait, how did that happen?
Yeah, and that's the tricky part, isn't it? Because it does seem like, as creatures, we do have those kind of ebbs and flows, or whatever, however you want to talk about it. You know, I'm really into this. I'm not so into that. I'm really into that. No, I'm not so, you know, which in a way is kind of good, because there are only so many hours in the day. And if we did everything kind of at maximum, we couldn't get it all in. And that is different from the, wait a minute, I didn't decide to stop. How did that happen?
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
Yeah, I can think of little things that have popped up over the years that interest me for a while, and then they fade and whatever. This one I think is different because I'm more attached to it. I'm more interested in continuing to do this particular thing.
Yeah.
And
so then it becomes important that you not get conned in that way. Right? Because
yes.
if it were something you didn't care about and you forgot to do it, well, who cares, really? You know, it wasn't that important anyway. But this is something you want to do and you've decided to do. And you want to be in charge of when you do it and when you don't do it. It's not up for grabs. It's not something that it's okay that unconsciousness comes in and takes over and takes away from you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's I've got a process map I did last time I was down there in those parts, and it dealt with more of the fleeting interests and how they pop up and I get excited and then it drops away. But I know there's some stuff in there that's relevant to this.
Uh huh.
Because I just really enjoy playing.
Yeah. So here's something maybe you can consider and see what this is like for you. That for whatever period of time, for a month or whatever you decide. I mean, I hear that this is something you want to do for the rest of your life, probably. But just for the next month, you make a commitment that every day you're going to play that thing.
Okay.
Now, it could be, depending on what's going on in the day, and this is a lot what we were talking about with Jen, isn't it? Depending on what's going on in the day, you may only play 3 notes.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to play it.
Okay.
Yeah? So even if it's, you know, you get in late and you're tired and blah, 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 your commitment is you're going to pick that thing up and you're going to play at least 3 notes. Then the next day, you have a lot of time, you play more. But every day you play it.
And see what happens.
Yeah, because, it's the where it gets us is the conversation of, as you know, well, it's great, you're tired, there's no time, or other people are around, and it's really unfair, and you can't this, and you can't that. So it's okay just to miss it today. Then I have half as much chance of thinking of it tomorrow because I've already let it go once, right? And if it can talk me out of 2 days of doing what I've committed to do, the odds are really good I'm on my road to forgetting about it.
Yes. Excellent. I will commit to that and call back.
All right. Oh, I'm excited to hear what happens. All right. Thanks, Chris.
You too. Thanks, Chris.
Good night.
Good night, Michael. Bye-bye.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Chris. Sherry, we're going to break to hear an important message from our coaches program, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Oh, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And could you please introduce yourself?
Sherry and Michael, it's Dan in Massachusetts.
Hi.
Hey, Dan. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm calling because I'm at a I'm having a practice experience that feels new to me, and
feels,
I'm not quite sure.
Feels what, Dan?
New to me.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not quite sure where to go with it, and so I thought I'd call
okay.
and ask.
Good.
And so it's this. So what it is it's like a slight variation on some content that was really big for me a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
and the process that I'm sort of calling about is that my mind is on it 90% of my waking time. And that, of course, is not new. I spent most of my life perseverating on one thing or another. But it feels new because the past year or so, I've been really committed to not feeling bad, really committed to kind of reflecting what's around me, reflecting silence. And so there hasn't been a lot of really obsessive stuff going on, at least not for doesn't feel like in the same way that this is going on.
Uh-huh.
And what's new about it is not the obsessive behavior. In fact, you and I have actually talked about it in a guidance session once, but that I'm aware that this is going on. And what dawned on me the other day is that I have this commitment to not feeling bad, and that's been going really well, except it turns out that there was this huge exception to that rule around this content, and I was allowed to feel bad about that all the time. Yeah, and
it got narrowed down.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
exactly. And so I think what it is a lot of things that conditioning brings up, I can kind of shake off as just being not me. You know, that's conditioning. That's not me.
Mm-hmm.
But this is me. This is about something that I've taken responsibility for doing, and I'm not doing well enough. And it, you know, it's like to not think about this feels irresponsible. And I know that trick, but it still feels irresponsible. And so I obsess.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And I don't quite know how to ask you about it, Dan, because I don't want to reach any, you know, I don't want to pry. It doesn't sound like something that you necessarily want to put out the content about.
Oh, I actually don't mind that at all. I was just trying to focus on the process.
Oh, good.
The content is work, and I work with different groups of children. And there's one group of children that I kind of developed some advanced expectations about, that this group was going to be different, and a lot of people are counting on me to do more with them than me and my colleagues are normally able to do with the population we work with. You know, the kids have different ideas. Well, I'm not sure they have different ideas, but anyway, it's just not going the way conditioning told me it was going to go, and I'm kind of at sea. And so all of my karma about feeling disorganized and not knowing what to do and not having time to figure it out, and like none of my coping mechanisms are working, and so I obsess.
Uh-huh. And, yeah. And interestingly, of course, as you know, the obsessing is what keeps life's intuition and insight at bay.
Exactly. And that's the only part about this that feels new, is I know that and I know I'm doing it. And
uh-huh.
it just keeps snapping back there with more force and more pull.
Yeah.
Than, you know, maybe not than anything, but certainly than anything that I've had to deal with kind of in the past couple of years and with the awareness that I have for practice. So it's weird. Like, I know better, and it's one of those things.
Yeah, yes, yeah, okay. That's good. So because the way it's presenting it to you is it would be irresponsible.
Right.
And yet, you know that that's not true.
Yeah, you know, that actually helps. That helped me put my finger on it. Like, normally, I have faith that obsessing is not going to leave me open to life's intuition, and I have an experience of connection with authenticity and so forth that always turns out to be better. And yet, in this case, even as I'm talking to you, I don't believe it's going to work for this one, which is ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
But it's to where I'm at. It's weird. It's like I'm saying one thing and believing another. It's a very strange experience for me.
Yes. Well, I think it's, of course, a very important experience, because what I suspect is going on is that what you're actually seeing is what you're having, not seeing so much as you're experiencing identification from the inside out. So let me put this language to it and see if it rings true at all. That the person who is doing this doesn't feel like you. In other words, you know, and you're disidentified enough that you know that it's not irresponsible, not to go on knots here. The responsible thing to do is to turn this over to life.
Right.
That's the best thing for the teacher. That's the best thing for the students. Because turning it over to an obsessing ego is not good for the teacher and not good for the students. So you're disidentified enough that you know that. And so what you're experiencing is the identification's hold on your system.
Yes. It's a couple things. Three things occurred to me. Maybe I don't know how important they are. But one is there was this weird thing that tapped, like today wasn't so bad. And I almost didn't call because I started thinking, oh, see, everything's going to be fine. But I know that's a setup, because tomorrow it'll be what it was, and then I'll be back. Okay. So then there's that. And then the other thing is, it occurred to me that you know, if I'm identified with somebody who's crabby or something, like, I know that's not who I am, right? But there's a story about being in this role that is that's a pretty core part of my, you know, of the ego eye that tells me it's me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's why this is harder to shake free of, because what I'm, and then the third part of it is, what I'm told is, you know, it's one thing when there's just something going on, I know it's conditioning, because I can focus my attention on anything else and it'll be fine. You know, a tree, my breath, my family, you know, whatever. And on this one, it's sort of like, well, there's nothing out there you can put your attention on that's strong enough to hold it from being snapped back into this story.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is...
Because that's been my experience for the past month.
Yes. And so if we were to draw a picture of that, then I like that kind of rubber band or bungee cord image, right? So there's the identification, the karmic ego grip on the human being. So there's the picture. There's the authenticity, you know, is the color of the incarnation. And then there is the karma that has attached itself to that. So that's an outer layer, right? And in fact, that outer layer is there, an outer layer over authenticity is all I mean. And after we become adults, we believe that that outer layer is who we are, because we've lost touch with the authenticity, right? So there you are now feeling that layer, and you can move back from it, and then it's on a tether, right? It's on this rubber band. So you have that distance, and then you watch it snap back into place and take you over.
Hmm.
That's
that's a really interesting place to be.
It feels important because giving up the stuff that was not, you know, it's funny, like this is awful. Like, I'm not in a good mood when I'm thinking about this because I feel helpless and incompetent. And so it's clearly self-hate and everything is involved, right? But the underlying story of, you know, why I do this job and the role I'm in and so forth, like, there's nothing bad about that. So it's like, I've gotten confused about what I was trying to say, but it's like,
well,
giving this up feels like it's, I mean, it's still ego and it's still suffering, but it doesn't feel like giving up, you know, giving up misery.
In your heart, you want to do the best job you can do because you care about these people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's
and
not.
So the lie is perseverating is the way to do it.
That's right.
It out is the way to do it. Okay.
Because that is not ego's motivation.
Right.
And that's the place we all stumble over, right? Because what its motivation is your suffering. Because all your attention is on it. It's not on you. It's not on your family. It's not on the students. It's not on anything. It's just on.
And that's what I can remember that will help me get out of this, I think, is that when I'm in it and trying to figure out, I feel desperate to figure out, if I can make the rubber band or the bracelet or whatever that says the compulsion to do this is not trying to serve anybody.
Except ego. Yes. Because, again, Dan, if you watch where your attention is, you'll know who you're serving.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah, for sure. That's the weird thing about this is it daydreams about conversations with people that I never had and I'm never going to. It's arguments before the court. You know what it is. It's all the conditioned stuff.
Yeah.
Same stuff.
Yeah. Yes. And it's all to keep your attention on it. The other thing that I think is really helpful to remember is that system doesn't care a fig about those kids.
Right, exactly. That will get me out of it because I do. I'm not going to spend any time with somebody who doesn't.
Exactly. And then makes you feel bad because you're not able to be different.
Right, right.
Yeah. It's evil, isn't it?
All right. Yes, it is.
It's just so wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of the dropping ego, you know, dropping identity project, it feels like if I can get a different relationship with this layer, that feels pretty big. So this is.
Yeah. So get those, you know, the karma nippers, and when that bungee cord, that rubber band is stretched out there, just cut it. You know, it'll repair itself in a heartbeat, That's okay. Yeah, as long as you're cutting.
Then I'll call back. When that happens, I'll call back.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Sherry. Have a good night. Good night, Michael. Thank you.
Good night.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Dan. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, I think there's time for one more caller.
All right.
Okay, here we go. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Gabriel from New Jersey.
Hi there.
Hello.
What did you say your name is?
Gabriel.
Gabriel. Hi, Gabriel.
Like the angel, yeah.
Like the angel. All right. What's going on?
Okay, well, before I start talking, I do want to ask for your help. I was thinking of things I want to talk about. It's my first time calling in. And I have a blank page that I wrote what I wanted to talk about on, but I filled it up with a bunch of things on the front and on the back. And I guess I just want some guidance on where to speak from because I have a bunch of sub-personalities that want to talk. And I just want you to help me to find out where to speak from so I can get really good use of this conversation.
So Gabriel, where are you in your practice? What's going on in practice right now?
Right now? All right. Well, I'll tell you what I think is really important to me is I feel that my ego is using spirituality or has been using spirituality for years to sort of like disassociate from life and disengage.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like I'm always okay, and I have no road rage, and I'm not reactive, and I'm pretty much not really paying attention, not really involved. So there's like an aloofness. I'm like on a cloud kind of thing.
Uh-huh. And what are you doing on that cloud? What goes on? So you're not really engaged.
Dreaming. Well, I wouldn't say daydreaming. I've been asked this before. It's really like a void. There's really nothing going on, but life is still going on. I guess I'm just safe and pretty much fearless and in a certain sense, of course, and content and happy. But then at the same time, it's almost like I'm disengaged. It's kind of hard to,
uh-huh.
I'm comfortable, very comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. And so do you go to work?
Yeah, I do. But you see, it's like I don't have a steady schedule, and I teach singing lessons at my apartment, and I also work as a waiter. And I don't have like a fixed schedule on either jobs, so I pretty much just go when I'm called, and I teach when I have a student, and I don't really put myself out there too much, but things come and go. I'm just in this very like everything comes and goes whenever it wants to. So I'm not really in charge of life. It's almost like life is just happening to me.
Would you wish any of that were different?
Well, the thing is, when I'm okay, I'm okay. And then when I'm not okay, then I'm like, oh, I better get okay. So that's a good question. I can't really answer that. I mean, I feel like this is a good life. The only problem is I want to be more. When I get in trouble, I have to call my dad for money and stuff like that, and then he gives it to me. And I want to be more independent, I guess. Sometimes I make a lot of money. Sometimes I make little money. My dad's not happy about giving me money. I don't know. I want to be more not in control, but just more conscious, more aware, more paying attention. It's not even distracted. Nothing bothers me.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry?
Until it does. It sounds like you go along in this state, and then something happens, and you're not in this state any longer. You don't have money. You don't feel all that good. Do you get depressed? Is that?
Yeah, well, it goes in and out. But I don't have a problem with getting depressed anymore. It's almost like it's a very strange place that I'm in. And it's only a phase, I'm sure. I haven't always been here, and I haven't always been like this. But I had an awakening in 2007, and I think that totally messed me up because I was very driven to, like, you know, achieve things and stuff like that. And now I'm sort of like, I don't want anything, but I do, but I don't. Am I being very unclear? You see, this is why I have a bunch of things on the paper.
No, here's my question. Do you wish that you participated more? Would you like to feel more connected? Does service draw you?
I wish I were more focused, and I want to like build my create a career as a writer and a singing teacher. I'm writing a book, and I sort of like wish I put more energy into committing myself to being a teacher that's generating steady income kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And I want to stop the. Yeah.
So you're fine just kind of wandering and drifting around. Part of you is fine with that. And part of you isn't fine with that. Part of you would like to be, I could almost say, would this fit more grown up?
Yeah, totally. That's actually, I wrote that down. Like, I want to be a grown up. Yeah, I don't want to be.
Yeah, because teenagers, you know, wander around and then they call their parents when they run out of money.
Yeah.
So you would like to be more a grown up, and that's going to require some discipline.
Yeah, and you know, when you speak to other people about, you know, like, read this book or try this on or do this or do that, I'm like, I shouldn't have to work to be more conscious. It should just be natural kind of thing.
Yeah,
so,
you know what we call that in Zen, don't you?
No, I don't. Tell me.
Crapola.
What's that? Crapola?
Yeah. That's a real tool that egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, uses, especially with privileged people in the West. You know, everything should be easy. Life, everything, it should all be easy. It should just all be given to me because...
It's not so much easy. It's more, I think maybe this is just a play on words, but just natural. Like the
natural
state.
It is your natural state. But where your attention has gotten captivated and captured is in the world of egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. So it is your natural state. But the world that you live in is the world of conditioned mind. And we have to break out of that prison before we can enter our natural state.
Well, maybe I think that the natural, what you're calling, in the natural state, I would be happy, successful, in the real sense of the word, psychologically healthy, content. And I think that self-hatred in me associates that with, like, being egocentric.
Yes.
So sort of like...
Gabriel?
Fighting... Yeah, sure.
Egocentricity always calls anything other than it egocentric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this being against myself, I'm very tired of it. Being the thing that I trip myself on.
Yeah.
I'm really sick of that. Like,
yes.
That's very, very, like, I'm done with it. I don't want to keep doing that one more second.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm calling. And I guess I'm trying to figure out how to do that.
Well, what you're describing, of course, is you want to do awareness practice. Because
doing it in my own way for a long time. So maybe I want to do it in a better way.
Yeah, because when we're doing it in our own way, what that means is that we have egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate as our guide and teacher. And
I listen to a lot of people I project are very conscious, like yourself, and I've been reading your book, There's Nothing Wrong With You, and I've read a lot of, you know, people who I project are very conscious, my voice teacher included, and also Ajashanti, I don't know if you know about him, and all that kind of stuff. So,
can I tell you something about that?
Sure.
Nothing works except practice.
Can you define practice from your standpoint?
Yes. So, if you were to decide that what you wanted to do every day, now this is this is one of those, you have to prove it to yourself. You could make a commitment to do anything. You're going to, when you get out of bed in the morning, you're going to touch your toes 10 times and say, thank you, life, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
You do that every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see if you're paying attention, how karmic conditioning, self-hate, controls you, because it will do everything in its power to keep you from doing that.
I know that already.
Very good. So then
yeah.
You know that practice is what you have to do. All the intellectual understanding in the world, it's entertaining,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's useless. Yeah.
All
right. So it sounds like we will be talking about this again.
I hope so.
Good. In the meantime,
I look forward to that. Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, here's my encouragement. Decide
okay.
what your practice is going to be. And do it every day until we talk.
Okay. Well, in my the voices are telling me now is you've stuck to practices before, but it never lasts forever. You only can do it for 6 months, for a year, for 3 months, for whatever. But then inevitably you end up.
Gabriel, you've just laid out the whole deal, right? You've laid out the entire deal. That's what's controlling you. That's what's running your life. That's what you
yeah.
have to end.
I know what you're talking about, and I'm done with it.
What? Okay. All right.
Yeah. Cool.
So
talk to you soon then.
Stick with that practice. Now, you know, recording and listening is what we do, so you might consider it. But chart everything those voices say to you, everything they say to you, just observing, just noticing. Just write it down, record it, just keep track of everything that they say to you. Okay?
Yeah. They're very clever.
And do whatever your practice is.
They're very clever at seeming like they're not saying anything.
Mm-hmm. But you get the message. And as long as you're getting the message, they're talking.
Mm, cool. Can you give me one example practice before you go, and then
one example, or suggest one? One of our folks, you know, decided that she would bow to her front door every time she left the house.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, you know, she would be clear down into wherever and have to turn around and drive back and bow to the front door. So
I love that.
Seeing all of the ways you get talked out of being present and being the one making the choices about your life.
I love that. That's a good one. Thank
good.
You.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
All right. You too. I'll talk to you another time.
Good. Thanks.
Bye. Goodbye. Thank you both.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Gabriel. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Thanks.
What a great show.
Yeah. All right. Soon, huh?
Yes, indeed.
All right. Thanks,
Thank you,
Michael.
Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.